podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Anfield Wrap. I'm Harriet Pryor, and in the room with me this week I've got Philippa Smallwood, Michael Manning and Beth Lindop, the women's football writer for Reach. And we're going to talk about the women's game this week, a very exciting Merseyside derby on Friday night, and also reflect on the women's game more generally. But first of all, I want to thank our partner Access Sport and the Stephen Gerrard Academy. We are very excited to be working alongside them to bring a brand new football media programme to Liverpool for students aged 16 to 18. It kicks off in September, and the Further Education programme will provide hands-on experience in all aspects of football media, including broadcasting, reporting on games, podcasting, videography, photography, and much more. Everything we do on a daily basis, hey Mick? Well, everything we're not very good at. We try to be very good at. Andy's looking at me angrily. It'll all be alongside a professional qualification and professional development programme powered by Access Sport, with pathways into employment, apprenticeships or higher education, with degrees focusing on sports and football media. If you have a passion for football and media, then register for the next open day on the 13th of April, or if your children do, or anyone that you know that might be interested, and you can find out how you can use your passion to tackle a future career across the many exciting roles of football and sports media. There's only 16 students allowed on the course, so to register your interest, simply apply on www.accesssport.ac.uk/tour, completing the contact form, and you'll receive an official invite for the next open day. Let's talk about the game then, Philippa, on Friday night. I want to start with the sense of occasion. 22,000, over 22,000 at Goodison. It was just further sign of real growth in the women's game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I know Everton played at Goodison last season, and they got around 6,000, I think. So I think it just shows, you know, how much the game's grown just in 12 months, really. You know, largely due to the success of the Euros, I think. But I think just in general, people are getting more used to watching women play football. You know, the exposure that they're getting now with games being on the BBC and Sky, it all helps, you know, getting more people wanting to watch the game. And yeah, it was just, to me, that was the best quality derby that we've ever seen, really. You know, there was plenty of good play on show. And again, that will only help as well with getting more people wanting to come back and watch again, which is what we all want.
Yeah, Beth, you work in women's football, and I think what was really nice, obviously, Philippa mentioned they have played at Goodison before, the women's team, but it was the first derby and that felt like it was its own sensification. But why does it help to have these women's games at the bigger stadiums and with more eyes on them?
I think it just, it widens the exposure, and I think there's probably a lot of young girls and boys as well at the game on Friday who it was potentially their first ever football game. And, you know, we know how difficult it is to get tickets for the men's games sometimes, and you know, it's so pricey as well, whereas, you know, women's football shouldn't be seen as a lesser alternative, but certainly a cheaper alternative and a more accessible alternative at the moment. So, you know, for you know, week in, week out at Prenton Park or Walton Hall Park, where Everton play, you're getting a couple of thousand, whereas you have the opportunity to fill stadiums that are 40,000, 50,000 capacity. So to see, you know, on a Friday evening as well, because initially the game was meant to be played on the Sunday, and I think it might have been interesting to see if we'd have had a few more there maybe on the Sunday afternoon. But, you know, to turn out on a Friday night, 22,000 is really impressive. And big occasions like this, like Philippa said, being broadcast live on Sky as well for people at home to watch it and see. I think it was Matt Beard who said after the game it was a great advert for the WSL, and it really was. So hopefully, you know, we can get more of these games at the big stadiums as well going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a bit worried about the Friday night thing because I thought maybe it was a bit late for a lot of families to come with their children and stuff. But yeah, 22,000 on Friday night. I would have liked to have seen what happened if it was on a Sunday. Maybe we'll get that next year. Michael, the atmosphere, I felt, really lifted the level of the game, because we've been to Prenton Park, all of us, a lot this season and watched women's play. And it's definitely been getting better game after game, but that felt like one of the most complete performances that they put together.
It was a massive advocate to just say, just get away and in every WSL game, yeah, please, because yeah, that was spectacular being part of that. Like even the last day on 80 minutes, like you could feel even the crowd, like there was lots of familiar faces. Oh yeah, running over to us, giving it loads. So that's what you want to see. You want to see atmosphere. You want to see that bit of bite, a bit of feral atmosphere. You want that. So it was a massive advocate to say, get that, make sure we've got away ends for next season. I loved it, like being part of that. There was loads of familiar faces in there, but loads of new ones as well for a Liverpool end, I suppose. And that's all you can ask for, really.
Under the lights as well, it was quite nice. You rarely get to watch women's football under the lights when it's dark, and that felt like it created its own atmosphere. Philippa, I want to reflect on the start of the game. If you think about the Anfield game back in September, they came out slowly and they let Everton get a foothold in the game really early on. What did you make of how Liverpool started this time around?
Yeah, I mean, it was really impressive for me. I think they showed that they'd obviously learnt a lot from that Anfield game and was determined not to allow the occasion to get to them this time, which I think is definitely what happened at Anfield. And I'll be honest, I've been to quite a few of the away games this season, and that is the best I've seen Liverpool play away from home this season. For me, you know, they deserve the 3 points. I'm sure we'll go on to what happened in the game, but you know, they basically set the stall out early on in the game, and they didn't allow Everton to settle, which I think helped us, because I think there was kind of a little bit of a reverse as to what happened at Anfield, where, you know, Everton kind of were a little bit rabbit in the headlights, and that was largely down to how we started, and we started on the front foot and, you know, didn't allow them to get that foot in the game. We pressed them, and, you know, at Anfield, that just didn't happen. We kind of sat off and was like a little bit frightened, I think, of you know, the occasion. But I was just really impressed with, you know, how they managed to turn that around and, you know, just didn't allow that occasion to get to them this time.
Yeah, I'll come back to you because Matt Beard spoke before the game and he said the pressure obviously was a bit too much at Anfield, and he spoke about the pressure being reversed because it was away from home. Do you feel there was a sense of that Everton had to turn up for their fans and Liverpool could kind of go under the radar and just and not be as under pressure as they were in front of the home crowd?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think as well, sometimes it's about what's happened in the games before it. So the fact that they'd beat Spurs and got those 3 points on the board, and, you know, a lot of us feel that, you know, that's put us in a safe position. So they could kind of go into that derby game and go, you know, we've got nothing to lose here. Whereas when we played them like second game of the season, you know, there's a little bit more to lose. You know, you've beat Chelsea and everybody's going into the game and thinking, oh, they're going to beat Everton now. You know, they've managed to beat the best side probably in the WSL. And then, like you say, you know, the roles kind of reversed at Goodison. You know, Everton are going into that game and everybody's looking at where everybody is in the table and going, they should really be winning that game, especially when they've beat Liverpool 3-0 earlier on in the season. So I do think it does reverse a little bit. But I think we also imposed ourselves onto that game, and, you know, that was a big thing.
Yeah, Beth, we spoke before the game at the training session and we were kind of predicting how things might go. And we were a little bit nervous, weren't we, for the Liverpool, from the Liverpool perspective, because of how the game had transpired in September. I think the start of the game did really help, but also going back to basics at Anfield, we saw a bit of a shift in how Matt Beard wanted to set up and a bit of a change in formation. Do you think there was a sense of just sticking to what Liverpool knew and what they knew they could do well in this game?
Yeah, absolutely. There wasn't too much sort of experimentation. And I think in part that's down to the fact that Liverpool have been really blighted with injury of late. So they haven't really had the opportunity to rotate and try new things because they haven't had, you know, a vast number of players at their disposal. So I think maybe Matt Beard's hand was forced a little bit into sort of sticking with the tried and trusted, but it really worked. And I think, you know, as Philippa said, I think it'll be exciting to see sort of how Liverpool finish the season now, because that win over Spurs was huge, not just in terms of, you know, mathematically the 3 points where it puts Liverpool in the table, but psychologically Spurs are another side that have been struggling for form at times this season. And it felt like if Liverpool had lost that game, it would have really sort of drawn them back into that relegation scrap at the bottom of the table. So I think there was this sense that the pressure was off and the shackles were off, and they were able to just go and play. And, you know, Liverpool have some really quality players in that team, especially, you know, we might get onto her a bit later on, but Fuka Nagano has been sort of her impact on this team has been so transformative. I'd say, I don't think that's too strong a statement. She's been sublime. And I think when players like that are given a bit more freedom and a bit more of a license to just go and play the game, then, you know, it's really nice to see. So, it was lovely. It was, as Philippa said, probably the best I've seen Liverpool play away from home this season.
Yeah, some people might not know how the state of the table looks, so I'll just give people an update. We're currently sitting eighth, 15 games played. There's 12 games in the league, so we're in eighth on 15 points. And at the moment, there is Tottenham, Reading, Brighton and Leicester at the bottom on 7 points. So, yeah, like Beth said, we're really starting to look up now rather than look behind us. But I do want to touch on some of the players, in particular the midfield, because I thought for me that was the standout of Friday night, how they all operated and how they linked up. How did you feel about those three in midfield?
Yeah, I think Kerry got player of the match, and it's just as always, like, she's so consistent. It's with likes of Nagano there, she takes all the pressure off Nagano to be that creative link. Like, Kerry's doing the legwork, but then also she was so unlucky towards the end not to get the winner there for the 2-1. But yeah, they've been unbelievable. I think it's freed up Missy as well. Like, at times in the championship, I suppose, like, I felt like Missy was being put around, whether it's right or left, and then down the centre, and it didn't really have a consistent position. Whereas that sort of, I don't know, it's a 5-5-3-2 or a 3-5-2, or however you want to look at it. I feel like that midfield three now has become his foundation. That's where it's set each week. And yeah, Fugnagano has just been such a spectacular addition to this side. Like, every time you see her on the pitch, like, you just light up seeing her from the stand. So never mind what she's actually doing with the ball, and so she's phenomenal. It was at the Reading game, I think, where that's where we've seen her at her best and the first real introduction. And since then, that all your eyes are on her to be that creative force in the midfield. So that's. To see that at Everton, when you know you've got to sort of dig deep and we're not going to have as much of the ball as you'd expect or hope, to keep that sort of operation in full flow, it's defensive, but then with the creative spark there. So yeah, I was made up to see how it played out at Goodison.
Yeah, she's clearly a popular figure as well. When we saw her training, people kind of putting their arm around her a lot and getting her involved in everything, and that's really nice to see as well. And I felt like they gave the ball to her a lot in situations where they didn't really know what to do with it. They were like, well, just give it to her because she'll be able to get out of situations. I do want to talk about the goal that we did concede, because that did come first. Do you think it was avoidable? It was a difficult situation for Rowe, but do you think that it could have been avoided?
I mean, yeah, she gets turned, doesn't she? So she thinks that Gabby George is going to go down to the byline, and then she cuts back and basically puts a cross in.
Which, it was good from her, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching the women's game for quite a lot, used to go regularly watching Everton with Neil, and saw Gabby George basically come through the ranks and everything at Everton. And, you know, she's a really quality player. She's got that ability. She normally, up until like this season, has played as a centre-back. And it's interesting, really, that she's kind of moved into that more creative role. But for me, I think it was more of a mistake by Laws than by Robe. I think, you know, that's one that normally she wouldn't have any issues with at all, and maybe just got her footwork a little bit wrong, expected it to I don't know, not go where it went in a sense, maybe just got caught out a little bit. But as I said to people sat in and around me, you know, she's dug us out so many times this season, you know, sometimes you've just got to accept that goalkeepers make mistakes.
She thought it was a cross rather than a shot, or like she wasn't expecting the shot to come in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think she was expecting the cross. I'm still not sure it was a shot, to be honest, but, you know, you see it regularly as well in the women's game where those kind of like cross shots, you know, always seem to go in at the far post. And, you know, it's something that I think the female players obviously practice a lot as well, as just whipping that in to that far post and hoping for the best. Sometimes, you know, if you get it a little bit wrong, sometimes it can actually work out for you, and I think that's what basically happened there. But I mean, like I say, she's dug us out so many times. I'm not going to be too harsh on Lawsy there.
Yeah, and shortly after there was the goal line stop from Gemma Bonner. That 5 minute period after we did concede a goal, it did feel like things were starting to look a little bit nervous, and that goal line stop kind of changes the trajectory for me, because if that goes in, you can easily start to see things spiral, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is probably the sort of moment that defined the game and the shape that the game took, because as you say, if that's 2-0, Everton have got the tails up and you know, 2-0 up going into half time, it's almost game over, really. I think Liverpool have sort of the mental resilience to come back from that. So That was an outstanding block by Gemma Bonner, and I think then that really helped sort of Liverpool then think, you know what, we can do this. And then they got, shortly after that, they rallied really quickly and got onto the front foot, and that is obviously then where the goal came from with Katie Stengel.
Yeah, let's talk about the Stengel girl. Stengel, I just love her. It was great strength, Mick, wasn't it? I've just called you Mick on a show. We'll go for it. Spanish Mick, Michael. I thought it was great strength from Stengel to basically hold up the ball and be able to get around the defender. But also, there's games where Stengel doesn't seem to do that much and have that big an impact on a game. And then she just pops up with a goal. And that's the real value to having a player of her calibre, I guess, in the side, isn't it?
Yeah, we were saying a few weeks back when we were at Prentons, like the keys to our side are Lawsy and Stengel. Like, they take all the pressure off, and if there's a football within 5 yards of Stengel's, it's hers. Like, it's her ball every time. The way she can hold up and turn, and you've just seen that goal so many times from her to take the touch. The defender's got no chance if she's got the back into you, then you're not getting anywhere near it. And yeah, the finish is quality. It's right in the bottom corner. Keeper's got no chance, and it's been. I just keep thinking how lucky we were almost to get that sort of a player last year in the Championship, and then to have that step up. And it's been difficult at times, and she's not really the consistent partner. Like, Daniels is there and doing a solid job, and then like Savannah Sandin comes on as a supportive role to the side and up front. But yes, Stengel's just been a consistent, almost like a phenomenon, to be honest, for what we've needed. And we've been very unlucky with like Sakina and being out for so long. But to have her up front, and she's always in the right position as well. We're very unlucky not to make it 2-1 again later on in the game when the ball comes across. And she just drops back, Van der Sanden gets the ball laid across to her.
Yeah, a little 2-on-1.
So unfortunate. So always seems to be in the right position. The work rate from her. It's exactly what you need, especially when we're in these defensive battles and when we've got to grind out results. The Spurs game for a few weeks, a few weeks ago, she's phenomenal in terms of she doesn't get on the ball a lot during that second half, but it's that constant pressure that the defence can't relax, and she doesn't allow them to take the foot off the gas for 1 second. So, yeah, we've been absolutely blessed to have her in the side.
You're right, though. She was a WSL standard player coming into a Championship team, and I think she really raised the standards of the team. But she also puts a lot of pressure on herself, and you can see, Philippa, whenever she misses a shot or something doesn't quite go her way, she's the first person to kind of beat herself up. But it doesn't ever hold her back. It just pushes her on to go, right, I'm going to get a goal this game. I'm going to make sure I make an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually feel like she's the difference in us being right at the bottom and where we are. Without her in this side, you can see it with other sides. You know, they struggle to get those goals, the consistent goals from anywhere, like any other player. And I think that's why Spurs spent so much money on Beth England, because they see her as basically their Katie Stengel. I'm really, really hoping that she's here for longer, and that, we see her beyond the summer, because I think she's a massive, massive part of the success of this season. And I do think it's a success, if I'd have snatched your hand off basically to be in this position at the start of the season, to be going into like the last seven, I think it's seven games we've got left, to be going into those last seven games with like the pressure off and, looking up rather than looking down, like you say, I think is phenomenal really for this side. And like I say, she's been a massive, massive part of that.
Yeah, Beth, we'll stay with the attack and the chance creation. I've got some of the stats up here. So we had 38% possession, but actually we created 16 shots to Everton's 12 and 6 shots on target to their 3. There was a sense of real purpose with the ball, wasn't there? That whenever we got it, it wasn't like, right, we're going to look backwards, but we were going to really be on the front foot. Do you think that was a intentional style of play, and being quick on the counter-attack was how they were looking to get through this Everton side?
Yeah, absolutely. I think sort of since Brian Sorensen's come in at Everton, he's implemented a more sort of possession-based style of play, and they're very good at playing through midfield, and they'll be patient with the ball, and they're not afraid to sort of pass it around the back. And so I think, Liverpool had to be direct at times, and they had to be, clinical and create, when they got into the final third, create clear-cut chances. That's something I think they've been maybe culpable at times this season of not doing. They've had the ball, and then sometimes they've got into the you know, the final third and not really looked like they know what they're going to do with it. And I think Matt Beard said earlier in the season, sort of missing chances and not being clinical or creating clear-cut chances has been sort of their Achilles heel this season. So I think to go to Goodison Park when there's so much pressure on you in terms of, you know, the occasion, as we said, and, you know, being live on Sky Sports and everything like that, to actually go and be fearless and direct in the way that they were, I think they deserve an enormous amount of credit for that. And I think, you know, just on Katie Stengel, I think she just epitomises everything that was good about that Liverpool performance. And, you know, she gets a lot of plaudits for her goal scoring, which, you know, that's what she's in the team to do. But as Michael said, her work rate is just absolutely phenomenal. She's so dogged and determined up there. And when you think for so much of this season, there's been sort of four of Liverpool's seven forwards have been out. And that's an enormous sort of mantle for Katie Stengel to take on as sort of the lone striker. And I think lesser players would maybe think, oh, I'm not getting the service, or I'm not getting the chances, or I'm not getting the support in terms of, you know, having a strike partner or wingers who are consistently playing. But she's never done that. You know, she's determined and persistent, and that was everything that was sort of, they were the hallmarks of Liverpool's performance on Friday, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we have to go from the positive to the negative and talk about the disallowed goal. How are you feeling a couple of days on, Michael?
I was on social afterwards and I was absolutely fuming. I was retreating like Lawsy and all that online, because doing the social for our channel, like I just couldn't believe it. It didn't make any sense in the ground. I had Liv Graham and all that behind me, and Mike Keeney in the away end. Yeah, when it went in, it was a proper, like, it was limbs, to be fair. Graham and Liv Graham shaking me and all that. I was trying to tweet, get a photo of it all. We were all made up, couldn't believe it. What a turnaround. Again, it goes back to Liverpool's professionalism and keeping their heads, and they got ourselves back in the game, and that's not where we've been. I've not been in that position really this season to see them flip the game on its head. Then for that decision to happen, I don't want to be too overly harsh on the referee, because it's a mistake. It is a mistake, and we've got in the men's game, you've got VAR to overturn those mistakes, so it makes it more difficult on those occasions. But it's just frustrating. It's that's all I can say. It just angers you to see something that's it's Kerry Holland on the line being a professional sort of engagement with the keeper. It's nothing more than that. There's no shirts hold or anything like that. So yeah, to see it given, and it's that case of getting away with being in the referee's ear. You see it time and again where you get annoyed that it's allowed to happen, and there's no yellows given, and there's a lot of pressure on the referees, and then these decisions happen, and we all get annoyed. So yeah, I'm incredibly frustrated, and I feel sorry for the Reds, because we should be coming away with 3 points really.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Robe as well, because she literally looked like it was like the moment of her career. She was just absolutely buzzing, and then it got taken away. I completely take your point. I don't think it's fair to be, you know, going hard on a referee when it was a clear mistake. But there is a wider thing, isn't there, Philippa, of letting the Everton goalkeeper basically dictate what she said that happened to her, and the referee kind of believing it because she probably hadn't seen properly herself, and that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah, I think when you actually see it back again, there's no way that the referee's got a clear view as to what's happened there. So she's literally guessed based on Courtney Brosnan basically running at her and screaming that there was a foul on her.
Annoying.
It really is. There's no other Everton player claiming anything at all. And to be honest, they're looking at Courtney Brosnan like, what's she going on about, sort of thing. But, you know, Courtney Brosnan was like that all game. She was just in the referee's ear. She didn't like anybody being anywhere near her. And that's the reason why Liverpool was doing it. They were just putting Katie Stengel and Kerry Holland, you know, in and around that area. But they weren't fouling her or doing anything, you know, that wasn't legitimate, and it paid off for her, because basically she's conned the referee. And I'm not going to be critical of the referee, because I think that, you know, it must be very, very difficult when you've got somebody being that aggressive and, you know, clear about the fact that they've been fouled. You know, she's been put under a huge amount of pressure, and she's buckled. And that comes as well from these officials not being given matches where they're in that limelight as much. You know, so I don't want to be too critical of them. I think they've only recently become professional referees as well. You know, they've been part-time up until recently. And, you know, it is an area of the game that I think the FA need to look at, and they need to look at improving, you know, the standard of the officiating. And to me, a lot of it is giving the officials the resources to be able to do more training, whatever it is that they need to get fitter, to basically be able to stand up to people being aggressive with them, which is what Courtney Brosnan was. You know, I think that's something that needs to be looked at more than looking at the referees and just basically saying that they're rubbish.
Yeah, more investment in that, along with all other areas of the game, and especially from a grassroots level, like getting women into refereeing really early on is key, isn't it? Because I think some of them, aren't used to playing in those really high pressure environments.
You know, the game's moved on at such a rapid rate, and the officiating just hasn't gone at the same speed. And like I say, I don't necessarily think that's on the referees and the officials. I think that's more on the game not looking at that area and thinking that needs to move with it. So it's just something that they need to look at.
I think it was Kelly Chambers, who the Reading boss earlier in the season said, you know, the WSL can't be a training ground for referees. And I think it's such a difficult position to be in, because I think, as you say, you don't want to be too critical of the referees, because a lot of them have been part-time for such a long time. And, you know, it's so easy with hindsight and replays to sit back and say, oh, it wasn't a foul. But, you know, in the heat of the moment, when you've got, as you say, a player being quite aggressive and bearing down on you and saying it was a foul, you know, you can understand where that decision has come from. But equally, if we want to improve the standards of the women's game and the professionalism, and we're investing money into it in the way that we are, then the standard of officiating does need to be better. And, you know, whether that's looking at maybe bringing VAR in, I don't know, because I think that goal would have stood if VAR was in. But it's so difficult, because that has potentially conned Liverpool out of 2 points. And you think, hopefully, you know, come the end of the season now, that won't be decisive. But if Liverpool hadn't won against Tottenham, then actually that's 2 points that could have been hugely, hugely valuable and could have dictated where Liverpool end the season. So I think the FA and everyone involved in the WSL needs to have a real conversation about the standard of officiating going forward.
Yeah, 100%. And one decision, another one that was potentially controversial, was the handball for Everton's disallowed goals. There was 2 disallowed goals in the second half. Do you think she got that one right?
Yeah, I think that was, when you look back at the replay, I think Jess Park, who...
It's a good spot by the ref.
It was, it was. And, you know, Jess Park has been, not to heap too much praise on Everton players, but has been one of the signings of the season, I think, for Everton, has been outstanding. And, you know, I think she was trying to con the referee into saying, it was my shoulder, but it was a blatant hand, and as you say, a good spot by the referee.
Yeah, Mick, Shanice van der Sanden comes on, and I think whenever she's come on this season, when she's not been injured and she's managed to play, she really does lift the spirits. I'm kind of sad that she wasn't on from the start, because I think if she had started, she'd have been a player that had a massive impact. But what have you made of her on Friday night, but also this season in general?
It's been stop-start for Shanice, hasn't it, really, with the injuries and so. But you see what she's capable of in that 20-minute spell or so. Like, it's the pace. Every ball that you put in behind, she's getting to. And then you've got the strength of Stengel on the other side. It can be a potential deadly combination for us if they get game time. But yeah, I was made up to see it. The battle, she's got the same strength as Steng. She's turning the defenders with ease, getting down the line. There's that one for the pass across. She's running with defender on her back for about 15 yards and gets to parry her off in the end. And yeah, I've been incredibly impressed with her in stints, and it's the second time round here. And I think it was a bit more of a reassurance, the signings in the summer. That's what you just needed to see, was a bit more of that quality coming back. And it's been a great addition. It's been a shame that she's been injured for and in and out of the side for so long. But But yeah, going into the final run-in now, if she can stay fit, then what an option we have, because it's still not really certain what we're doing up front in that front line. So to get her in alongside Steng, that'd be a sight to behold.
Yeah, you mentioned our partnership with Steng there. I think throughout the team, you can actually look through midfield and defence. There's a nucleus of a really strong team, isn't there? And do you think it is just those few more players coming in potentially in summer, retaining the players that we've got that are at that really high level, and then actually you can start building and thinking we could start challenging for the spots higher up in the table?
Yeah, because I don't want to be naive going into the summer, but it's been a brilliant season for like I said, Holland and Nagano just come in, and that's our challenge now, is to keep hold of these players, because that's what we're hopefully going to stay up now. It's not mathematically done or anything like that, but it feels the last two performances have been extremely reassuring. Now it's just the case of trying to keep these players around and keeping what they've built, because there's a good foundation there. There's a lot of the players from before they're going into the championship, and so they're only growing together day by day. So to keep them there, that's what we need to see going into next season, really.
Yeah, Beth, I'll come to you on this. Who do you expect there to be the most interested in terms of summer and potential departures or potential players that other teams will be looking at and thinking, oh, I'd quite like them in our team?
Well, I mean, at risk of sounding like a Fuka Nagano fangirl, I think sort of there's not a single team in the WSL who she wouldn't sort of make better, so if not in terms of the starting 11, then certainly within the squad. You know, I think she's definitely someone that teams will be looking at. I think maybe the fact that she came in January means that Liverpool might, you know, be let off the hook there a little bit, because, you know, the teams might want to give her a little bit more time to see how she beds in and has sort of a full season in the WSL. I think it's so difficult with women's football, because the contract situations are so difficult. It's so different than the men's game. You know, we saw Chelsea sign Mudryk on an 8-year deal, whereas actually in the women's game you get sort of 1-year, 2-year contracts. So players do tend to move on a lot more quickly. But I think, again, Kerry Holland is another one. She's a top player and again, probably deserves to be playing in a better team, because I think Liverpool, as you said, have a nucleus of a really good squad. But and Missy Beaucairns as well. I think certainly in the second half of the season, she's shown what she's capable of. But I think if they can keep hold of, as you say, Stengel, Nagano, Holland, they've got a really good base then to build on. And I think it will just be, sort of the real test will be how much are Liverpool prepared to invest in the summer, because we've seen sort of, you know, last summer Keira Walsh moved from Manchester City to Barcelona for a fee in the region of 400,000, and that was a record for a women's player. And then, you know, Alessia Russo getting sort of crazy bids in January. So we could be seeing a player going for £1 million in the summer, and it's whether Liverpool are prepared to invest, you know, 200, 300, 400,000 in a player. Are they going to do that to really push on up the table? So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what their next step will be in terms of the investment in the women's side of things. The final thing on the game before we look at the season a bit more generally, Philippa, is it's an evidence of their kind of progress in general. If you do think back to September and how they played against them, and you can look at all the January signings as well and how much they've progressed in that sense. But it's just evidence, isn't it, of their progress as a team and how far they've come this season.
Yeah, you kind of feel like, you know, they were still learning what the WSL was about early on in the season, and like now they've kind of, you know, they've got that foundation there now, and like you say, it's about building on that. I just think that Nagano's basically taken us up another level, and it's gone.
This is just going to be called the Nagano podcast. Yeah,
but it's basically taken us from being a team that is fighting relegation to basically being a comfortable mid-table team with the likes of your Everton and West Ham, really. I mean, I'm a massive Kerry Holland fan. I think her work rate is absolutely phenomenal. But what it's done in bringing Nagano is it's freed her up to basically do what she's best at. She doesn't have to sit in there and basically worry about what's going on behind her because Fuka's there. And like you say, Missy Beaucairns, I actually think that midfield three is a massive strength of this side. And if we can keep all three of those together, and then you've got Sophie Lungard, who has also been impressive when she's come on. We've not seen as much of Miri Taylor, but what I have seen is that she's got that aggression as well. You know, she'll come on, she'll put herself about. I mean, in the Spurs game, she, you know, she came on and she really gave it to Spurs and basically put the pressure back on them, which was really good to see. So I think if we can keep like that nucleus of the midfield, we can really build around that. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what we do at the back. I think Koivisto's been another really good signing. She's been like, I think the best person I can liken her to is probably Steve Finnan, that really solid, like, fullback who, you know, you can rely upon. And you know, she's always giving you 7, 8 out of 10 every single game. But it's going to be really, really interesting to see what we do at the centre back, because I think there's Jazz Matthews who's, I think she's out of contract in the summer. So it's going to be interesting to see if they re-sign her up. And then Nifahi, who's, you know, nearing the end of her career, I would say. You know, it'd be interesting to see if they sign her for another year or if, you know, she decides that, you know, time's right for her to hang up her boots or whatever. So for me, the biggest question marks are really at the back of the team, as to what we're going to do there. And even like goalkeeper, you know, we brought in Eartha Cummings in the summer, and I felt like she was, you know, really going to compete with Lawsie for that number one shirt. And it's kind of not quite worked out like that. But I don't know if, you know, that's playing a bit of a long game with her or not. And then, you know, we've got the situation with Riley Foster, which, you know, I would love before the end of the season just to see her come on, even if it's just for 2 minutes at the end of a game, just to go on that massive journey that she's been on the last couple of years. Is, you know, it's been upsetting, but it's also been really heartwarming to see, you know, the game kind of rally round her in a way, and you know, if she can make it back onto the pitch in some form, then I think that would be a real credit both to the club and to her as well. I think the strength that she's shown has been phenomenal.
Yeah, what a moment that would be if we got to see her back on the pitch. I want to stay with the defensive line, Michael, and just talk about Gemma Bonner, because she's someone we actually haven't spoken about yet, apart from the goal line clearance early on, but she's been a really good addition to the side in terms of the defensive stability. What have you made of her this season?
It's just been just what we needed, really, with say Neve out a little bit more, and I was always a bit worried about, like, Hannah Silcock's been phenomenal every time she's come on the pitch, but then it's also, you don't want to rush to development too much as well, so to have another leader added into the pack and someone that the club's used to, she knows the club inside out. Bonner's just been unbelievable, and to see it coming into that back line, and it just feels like a next step of reassurance into this. If it is for next season, I imagine I'm hoping she sticks around too. But yeah, for those games, especially the derby, she knows what it's all about, and you want to.
She was buzzing, wasn't she, when we spoke to her? She was like, "Let me play now."
But that's what you need. Like, that's why for these occasions, you need to know what it means locally, and to the fans that go home and away. You need to know what playing against Everton. You need to know what turning up at Goodison means, because you need to put on a show. And we did not put on a show on Friday, and we played a performance that I come away from, even though we were disappointed with the goal disallowed. I was so proud of that side, and that starts off with players like Gemma leading the line from the back, and having the Hollands in there. So that's what I'm taking away as like the proudest bit of the finish to this season, I suppose, is seeing players like Bonner come in and really just establish a strong starting 11, but then almost establishing what it means again to play for this club, because I couldn't have been prouder on Friday night.
Oh, that was lovely. Wasn't it? I want to talk a little bit about other key results, Beth, and Chelsea first day obviously setting the tone for the season, the Reading at home result, Tottenham as well, but within there has been some challenges and some difficult results. I think Leicester at home is probably the one that sticks in a lot of our minds, where we felt like we should have got a result. They have struggled a bit with inconsistency at times. What do you think the biggest challenge has been, and why has there been kind of this up and down roller coaster at times this season?
I think they have been finding their feet back in the WSL. You know, a lot of these players have been with Liverpool since the Championship, and you know, there is a real disparity in the level at Championship and in the WSL. And I think even the players that have been, you know, playing in the WSL, you know, a few years ago before Liverpool were relegated, the amount of money and investment that has been put into the league in that time, you know, it's chalk and cheese, really. I mean, if you go back to when the WSL was first formed, Liverpool were one of the strongest teams in the division. They won, obviously, back-to-back league titles under Matt Beard. But since then, you know, your Arsenals and your Chelseas have just continued on this upward trajectory. And I think, you know, I think Matt Beard said a couple of times, Liverpool are probably about 3 years behind that. And I know sort of fans have been frustrated sometimes with some of the results this season. Obviously, the 6-0 at Manchester United is probably the low point of the season. But you do have to be realistic and think, well, you know, these sides have spent an awful lot of money in top quality players, and they've had a few years of playing at this really high level. And for a lot of these Liverpool players, this is sort of a bit of a baptism of fire, really, going and playing against these top sides. And I also think they've been really unfortunate with injury. You know, I think as with the men's side, I think they've not had the best of luck, and especially in those forward positions, you know, they've been without Leanne Kiernan since the opening day. And obviously that win over Chelsea was huge in terms of setting the tone for the season, but I think actually it's maybe damaged Liverpool more in terms of they've lost last season's top scorer. You know, and I think it's a cliche to say she'll be like a new signing, but you know, she absolutely will. I think I'm really excited to see what she can do when she comes back into this team. So I think a combination of injuries and still finding the feet in the league has been sort of the reason behind that inconsistency.
Yeah, you're right to point out that the gulf that exists between the middle of the table teams and those at the top of the table. Can you, as a women's writer as well, just give a bit of context around the teams who are at the top at the moment and kind of why Liverpool is still lagging behind, I guess?
Yeah, so Chelsea currently, so they've won the WSL for the last three seasons, so they're bidding to win it for the fourth consecutive year. And that just shows you know, to have a team so dominant in the league, you know, what they've done under Emma Hayes and the investment that they've put in. You know, they set a record a couple of years back for the transfer of Lauren James from Manchester United. They got $250,000 for Beth England going to Spurs in January. So this is the sort of money we're talking about these top clubs dealing, and it's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds, where actually a lot of Liverpool's players have come in on free transfers or have come in, you know, for a much smaller fee. So I think that the financial disparity is huge. And Arsenal, I think, are probably historically one of the most successful sides in the women's game. You know, they've won the FA Cup a number of times. And so they've got that sort of established sort of fan base and history. And, you know, Liverpool, as much as it's obviously a huge club, one of the biggest clubs in the country on the men's side of things, on the women's side, it's almost a different entity. And I think that's what's frustrating sometimes for fans, is you think they should be up there with the Chelseas and the Arsenals and the Manchester Cities. However, realistically, they haven't invested as much as they probably should have done in the women's team over the years, and they paid the price for that when they were relegated. But I think hopefully now, you know, especially with the women's game continuing to grow after the Euros, it really will show the owners that it's worth investing in the women's team, and hopefully it will be the start of an upward trajectory for Liverpool.
Yeah, and Philippa, the more eyes that are on it and the more there is a financial benefit for investing in the women's game, because we can talk about sentimental value all you want, but the financial side of it is so important when it comes to, you know, investing in these teams and making sure that they've got the means that they need to go on and push on. The more eyes that are on it, the more media money that's in it, the stronger this Liverpool side is going to get.
Yeah, I think it goes across the board. You know, the likes of Brighton, Reading, you know, the sort of sides that struggle really to be able to compete with your likes of your Chelseas, your Arsenals. It's very easy to sit there and say these sides, you know, should invest a lot of money in the women's team. You know, we all want it to grow, and we see only benefits of them doing that. But there has to be more incentives, I would say, for teams to do that. You know, I've talked about it before, and I'll talk about it until I'm blue in the face, but the prize fund for the FA Cup, for the Women's FA Cup, is just ridiculous in comparison to the men's. And they made this big hoo-ha last season that this season the prize fund was going to be going up astronomically, and, you know, and then you actually get into the season and you find out that the men's has gone up even more. So the gap has actually got bigger rather than smaller. But you look at the difference that the money would make to the men, to the women's game compared to the men's, and you would say that actually the FA should look at flipping that a little bit. You know, these big sides, your Arsenals, your Liverpools, your Chelsea's in the men's game, they don't need that FA Cup prize fund. You know, the teams at the bottom do. You know, your ones that are in League Two, or you know, your non-league sides, they need that money. But so do the women's sides. And for basically teams to be having to fork out of their own pocket to be able to play in the FA Cup, for me, just isn't good enough. And I think that is where the FA really let the women's game down. You know, they're all for the Lionesses, and, you know, that's great. We've seen the success that we've had there because of the investment that they've put into the Lionesses. But there's other teams there as well, you know, that need help to be able to keep up with the growth of the women's game. And my concern is, I mean, I'm a Liverpool fan, so, you know, I'm a supporter of one of the big clubs. But there's sides in the women's game that I don't want to see fall by the wayside, because basically the FA just want the big clubs to basically invest in the women's game and take it on to that next level. To me, we need to be looking after those sides as well. And, you know, the likes of your Lewis, who for me are one of the shining lights in the women's game. I'd implore anybody to have a look at their setup and, you know, what they've done for the women's game. I don't want to see sides like that fall by the wayside because the FA are just interested in the big sides taking it on to that next level.
Yeah, you mentioned the FA there. I read an interesting article earlier, and it was talking about the game on Friday night. It said it wasn't, though, the most for a female match at Goodison Park, talking about the attendance record. On Boxing Day in 1920, 53,000 watched a women's game at Goodison Park, which shows you where the game was before the ban and the levels that we hopefully can take the game to in the future. Mick, I want to come back to Liverpool and just talk about their game against West Ham. It's their next one up. Do you think this could be a potential for their first away win of the season? Because it'd be really nice for Liverpool to get a result away from home, wouldn't it?
Oh, you never know. The home game, that was a cracking result for Liverpool. Like, if we felt good coming off, it was 2-0, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we come away from that, we're bouncing into the Clipper afterwards, and it was it built up a little bit because it's Matt's old side, and so, and these types of things. I'm a bit more confident now. I think, with, as you say, the pressure's off. Earlier on the season, the Liverpool Everton game, there's been a lot of spotlight from the Championship, I suppose. There's been a lot of pressure on Liverpool to perform in these big moments to make sure we continue this momentum. But now, before the Leicester game, I think we all got a little bit ahead of ourselves, and we were overly confident going into that. Whereas now those points are on the board, and the Everton away on Friday is just the biggest example of that. That we sort of can relax into our own natural game, and hopefully see a little 3 points away, because it'd be nice, because they deserve it. They've put in performances this season, and it has been difficult at times, but you think they're more than capable now of, as you say, fighting in amongst that middle few in the league table. And if you've got likes a Van der Sanden coming back, and we can trial those things out, if it means a Daniels comes on 60-70 and give them two a run out. So yeah, I'm all for. I'm on the 3 points train against West Ham.
We're all on the 3 points train. That article I referenced before, by the way, was from This Is Anfield. So do go and check that out if you want to. And there was also a podcast this week, a plug for my own podcast. I'm going to do it, but Shaping the Game. We spoke to some individuals and communities around the women's game about how they were shaping the game for generations to come. That's out for free as well. So do go and listen to that. And do also get yourself down to a game at Prenton Park. There's Brighton, I think, is the next home game in a couple of weeks, I want to say. It's the day after the Forest game at Anfield. You can go to Forest on the Saturday, Prenton Park on the Sunday, and have a lovely weekend of Liverpool football. And that's what I'll be doing. And thanks so much to Philippa, to Michael, and to Beth for coming on the show today, to Andy for producing, and Sam on the video. And yeah, come down to Women's Game and all get involved. The more, the merrier. Thanks for listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.